go to Genesis 12, and we're going to kind of walk through the Bible a little bit today. The scripture verses will be on the screen, and they're in your handout, in your notes. So before we get started, I just want to let you know that Chance and Abby Bird, which are a young couple in our church, they're going to be induced this afternoon. She is, actually. She's going to be induced this afternoon. And we affectionately call new babies at Livingstone's a new stoner. So they'll be having a new stoner this afternoon. And so be praying with them, for them. It's her first one, and so she was great with child. So last week, we began looking at the Christmas story, began to see that the Christmas story didn't begin with shepherds watching over the flocks in the fields. It didn't begin with the wise men following a star and a young couple that couldn't find a place to stay. It actually began much earlier than that, and it was much more epic than anyone could have ever imagined. In fact, the Christmas story we saw last week begins with an unbelievable, incoherent, and impossible promise. And this promise was carried through the entire history of ancient Israel and beyond. And in that promise, there's so much miraculous and there's so much amazing in many of the details and many people that are connected to the story that go beyond the accounts that we primarily focus on this time of year as we look at Matthew and Luke. Last week, we talked about a promise that God made in the book of Genesis. And it was an unbelievable, perhaps confusing promise made at a time when there simply was no way that the person receiving the promise could have understood what it even meant. But this promise set up the events around Christmas, and the amazing story around that promise is really what makes Christmas so believable. It was made 2,000 years before Jesus was born. We looked at, if you joined with me, in Genesis 12, verse 1, God is speaking to a guy by the name of Abram. His name later is changed to Abraham. And verse 1 says this: "The Lord said to Abram, 'Go from your country and your people and your father's household to the land I will show you.'" And he basically is telling Abraham that to leave everything you know, everything that is your security, I want you to leave that, which is extremely dangerous back then, because all the security and safety had to do with you being around your family or your clan or your tribe. But God tells him to leave everything, everyone he knew, in the security of his home. And then he says, just start taking out walking, and I will tell you to the place. When you get there, I'll tell you that you're there. And so it kind of reminded my dad. My dad was in ministry for 35 years, and he never left. What was kind of unique about my dad's ministry, he never left one church knowing where he was going. And that took us everywhere from Corpus Christi, Texas, to North Pole, Alaska, to Washington State, to all over Texas. And so he would just simply come to the end of his ministry. He had sensed God being done with him there, and just by faith would just kind of take a step, and which was a pretty big deal. That's kind of what God's telling Abraham here. And so he begins in verse 2 with a promise, begins to unfold that. He tells Abraham, said, "I will make you a great nation. And I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I'll bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all peoples on earth will be blessed through you." Like we said last week, none of that made sense to Abram, because at this time, he's around 75 years old. He has no descendants, has no children. And if he leaves everyone and everything that he knows, how in the world can he be made famous? How can his name be made great? And the piece about being a blessing to others wasn't even on their radar back then, because people weren't in the habit of blessing anybody other than their family. And yet, God says to Abram, all the people, all earth will be blessed through you. In other words, every person on earth will be impacted by your life. They're going to know your name, and they're going to be affected directly and indirectly through what I'm about to do through you, which again was incomprehensible and weird, because like we said last week, nations back then didn't bless other nations. They were more in the habit of plundering and taking advantage of each other. And yet verse 4, even in all that confusion and everything, verse 4 tells us that Abraham chose to believe the unbelievable. Verse 4 is an incredible verse. He says, "So he went as the Lord had told him." He's got to be thinking, "God, I don't know how any of this can possibly work. I don't have any children. I won't even be around when whether or not I become a nation, it won't be around, but God, I trust you enough to believe this unbelievable, impossible promise. And that's where we stopped the story last week. And we talked a little bit. We kind of paused right there in the story. And we talked a little bit about obedience. And there was four takeaways that I gave you. They're in your notes if you want to fill in the blank there. The first takeaway was this, is that God always connects his blessing with our obedience. Secondly, we said that all obedience begins with the belief in the sovereignty of God, that the belief that God is in control and he is powerful enough to do whatever he wants to do. And we said that if we don't get that, if we don't we don't believe in the sovereignty of God, then obeying God will always be a struggle. Obeying God will always be a struggle. Number three, takeaway, we grow in our obedience by waiting on God's timing. And we said that God is rarely ever early, but he's never late. He's always on time. Toot, toot. Remember that? That's been the most quoted thing in 12 years of Living Stones. People, toot, toot. They remember that. Fourth, said that our obedience is often followed by God's testing. It's often followed by testing. And if you grew up in church, you probably know that eventually God was faithful to Abraham and Sarah, that at the age of 190, they had their first son, and they named him Isaac. And Isaac had a son named Jacob. In fact, there's another, the next slide, I think, kind of gives you a picture of the generations and people that came began to come from that. And so they had Isaac. Isaac had two sons named Esau and Jacob. Esau was the oldest son, and his name should be up there. But what happened is that Jacob tricked his brother out of the birthright. Remember that? And so, I mean, there's so much family dysfunction in the Old Testament and in Genesis. It would actually make you feel better about yours if you kind of read that. And so it was unbelievable because Jacob stole the birthright from his older brother Esau. And if he hadn't, then Esau's name would be up there next to Jacob, instead of Jacob. But eventually, Abraham had a great-great-grandson. His name was Jacob, and Jacob has 12 sons. And 10 of the 12 sons hated one of the sons, whose name was Joseph. You remember that story? And they were jealous. That was his dad's favorite. Anybody have favorites in your family? Yeah. You know, we don't have it in our family. But he was his dad's favorite, his brother's. We're jealous of him. And so one day they're just going to get rid of him. Remember, they threw him in a pit. They're going to leave him there to die. And then they had a bright idea of, let's make some money off this dude. So they pull him out of the pit and sell him to some merchants that are going by. And Joseph ends up in Egypt. He ends up in Egypt. And eventually, the